Well, thank you very much. And thank you, Gideon, for that lead off. If I can just be a little bit more critical of the UK than perhaps Gideon is able to be. I was on the Climate Change Committee for its first 10 years, 2008 to 18. And we were always raising, yes, we're doing well now, but are we going to meet the future targets? And over the years, the Climate Change Committee started using ever more strong language to try and say we need a step change and whatever, because we do see some areas, in particular the power sector, where there's been tremendous advance. However, we see other sectors like transport, where despite electric vehicles, the emissions are almost flat, and buildings leak like sieves, and there is no the government policies to change that have been, to say the least, they've been off and on. And so we are critical of the way the things are going. It's been great what we've done, but we are no longer leading the world as we were, and it needs political power to make us get back there. So that's my sort of slight carp beyond what Gideon is allowed to say. So I thought I would start with a global CO2 chart. Gideon and I discussed that perhaps it would have been best the other way around, but I think in some ways it's good. You've seen Didcot Power Station. This is what happens when you integrate up all those emissions of carbon dioxide around the world. And this is the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's actually measured in Hawaii, but those motions of the atmosphere stir it up such that it really doesn't matter where you measure it in the world, you get approximately the same measurement, certainly over a few years' time scale. And this is actually from last month on the right-hand side back to 1957 on the left-hand side. And if you can see the numbers, it was back something 315 back then. The two pre-industrial value is probably about 280, and we're now up to above 420. So from pre-industrial times, it's risen 50%. And there are so many strands that says that's due to our activities impact in burning fossil fuels in particular. So there is no doubt that this is due to us. About half of what we've emitted is left there in the atmosphere. And while ever we go on emitting carbon dioxide, it will go on rising. Now, carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases are great news. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here because this planet would be frozen. So that 280 level was very important. However, like a lot of good things, when you have too much of them, then it's not such good news. And it is inevitable that as CO2 goes up, the planet will warm. There's no discussion on that. The only discussion is on how much. So if we're going to stop climate change, the only way to do that is to make the net emissions of carbon dioxide a zero, and that's the net zero. Now, because it goes on accumulating, it isn't just CO2. Usually what you see is a mixture of all the greenhouse gases. Carbon dioxide is the dominant one, but methane is important, nitrous oxide, and other gases as well. And those other ones make up about 20% to add on to the CO2 effect. The metrics you all see like a CO2 equivalent, but actually they all act in a different way. And when we get near net zero, we may have to take that into account. So that's the picture we have, and carbon dioxide has been rising. I might note here, I gave my first public talk on climate change in 1975. And you can see that over the years, I've been pretty ineffective about persuading anyone that this is a real problem. And if we look on this, then the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change produced its first report in 1990. And the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the countries of the world getting together to discuss how to limit this, met for the first time in 1995. But still, the CO2 goes on rising. So, Gideon has showed you a picture of the temperatures, global temperatures. I'll show another one, which is over the years, I've shown the picture like Gideon, but It's amazing that the impact that Ed Harrison's had with his climate stripes, where it's the same picture, but you have a blue colour for a cold year and a red colour for a warm year. And it's even on the Reading Football Club shirts now. I mean, this is everywhere. It shows the impact of actually communicating something in a manner that actually people can take on board. And this is another way of viewing that, with temperatures, global temperatures, which can be put together, reconstructed for the last 2,000 years. And there you see this latest post-industrial period on the right-hand side. And one has to say it looks rather unusual. Even Lord Lawson might say that, and the Global Warming Policy Foundation, although I've heard them say it's probably not. So that's what we're dealing with there, the problem, and that's the observed. It's unprecedented, essentially, what we're doing. Now, along with that, with the changes in global temperature, before I actually discuss this one, then we've seen many things change around the world in terms of climate. The temperature extremes have made huge impact in many countries around the world, including the UK, records here, there, and everywhere. So the extremes in temperature, and they've had huge impact as well on deaths, but on making a greater toll on human life. And then there's been the changes in rainfall. So it's been the average rainfall changing, but most important, it's actually the way that rain comes down. For perfectly good reasons, we understand a warmer atmosphere can hold more water. If it's 6 degrees warmer, it can hold 50% more water. So it's a very large effect. So the same rainstorm would be 50% larger in a 6 degree warmer world. And we are seeing that almost around the world, the heavy rainstorms, even in places where the total rainfall has decreased. When it comes down harder. And that's much more difficult to deal with in terms of flooding and in terms of actually collecting water for human use. So we need to look at this and project for the future about what might happen. And this uses various models, climate models, developed from weather forecast models by adding on more modules. But there's Newton's laws underneath that in terms and the thermodynamic equations, and then representations of various things that one has to put in. So these are model produced. But in order to project for the future, you need to say, well, what are we going to do? How much will we emit of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere? And here you see a projection of temperature rise into the future. And the top ones are as if there is no change in behavior. And the bottom ones are if global emissions fall rapidly to zero, certainly by the middle of the century. And you can see the temperature change by the end of the century, depends on what we do. At the upper end, it's 4.5 degrees. At the lower end, it might be 1.5 degrees. So it depends on us what happens there. Now, I want to show one picture to get into detail on this, because globally average temperature is really just a metric of how far we've got along the trail of changing the climate. We don't feel the globally average temperature. So this is what the model suggests. The temperature will be as a function of latitude, longitude, for a 4 degree temperature rise. And almost everywhere over the continents, it's more than 4 degrees, because the ocean takes a lot more to heat it up. So it might be 5 degrees over the tropical continents. That's way beyond the natural variability, which is very small in the tropics. So that's a huge impact. And then in the higher latitudes, you can see numbers like 7. In the wintertime, it's more like 12. We're talking about 12 degrees warmer in the regions of permafrost. So you can imagine what that would mean. And another feature just to note from this, the temperature contrast between one region and another would be different. And that means the weather would be different. It's not just the same climate warmer with the same weather. Weather feeds off temperature contrast. The weather would be different. Right-hand side shows precipitation. That's the mean, with some areas like the Mediterranean so much drier there that the agriculture of today may be almost impossible. Other areas wetter, but again, throughout the regions, then the rainfall is heavier when it comes down. Gideon mentioned sea level. I decided I would show a picture of sea level projections. And down the bottom there, you can see the range from the lowest scenario to the highest scenario, maybe half to 1 meter by the end of the century. And that's a very significant sea level rise. It's been about 20 centimeters so far. And the impact of the hurricane that hit New York, for instance, was a lot greater because the surge was on top of a 20 centimeter sea level rise. And so the overtopping was that much greater. So the present 20 centimeter is important. And if you live in an island in the Indian Ocean, then it's already getting pretty dangerous. So we're seeing a range there from maybe half to 1 meter. But the top line there is something that the IPCC tended not to do before. I think if the climate scientists could be criticized, is because they tended to give what we get if we're lucky, the very smooth change, the lowest common denominator of all those discussing it. The top line is actually what we cannot rule out on our understanding of the physics of the climate system. So it says that the low likelihood, but high impact, certainly high impact, because that's saying that sea level could be 2 meters higher by the end of the century if we go on the upper scenario. And Gideon showed the Thames Barrier. The plans for the next Thames Barrier are such that one could cope with a 2 meter sea level rise, and that's why. Now, the bad thing about sea level, in particular as climate change, is its timescale is many centuries, principally because the ice takes a long time to really melt, and also the ocean, the bottom of the ocean doesn't know it's warmed yet, and the ocean expands as time goes on. So by 2300 on the low scenario, half meter to 3 meter, and on the upper scenario, best estimate of 2 to 7 meters, but we can't rule out 15 meters or greater. We're talking about something here, if you think about the cities of the world, which are mainly built on the estuaries near sea level. This is just something that I don't know that we'll be able to cope with. We won't be able to do the Dutch thing of building those around the world to protect everyone. So that's the pretty stark thing of sea level rise. You may hear of tipping points, and as a mathematician, I would prefer sort of that we reach thresholds of change in behavior, perhaps. But what we're talking about is the possibility of jumps or rapid changes in the Earth system. This could be due to a sudden reduction in the Antarctic ice, West Antarctic ice sheet. We don't really understand how that ice sheet is able to lose its mass on the edges. It's happened 125,000 years ago that it lost a lot of its ice, and that could happen. It's being undermined. A lot of it is not grounded on land and can be undermined by warm water around there. So there could be a large reduction in the West Antarctic ice sheet. The overturning of the Atlantic circulation is maybe something that could be switched off. As the tundra melts, is there going to be a large release of methane? Well, these things could happen, and many others. We don't know where those threshold points are, but we do know as the temperature rises, the likelihood of them becomes much greater. I think human tipping points are also very important. In fact, some of them may be more important. This rising sea level, at some point, along with the temperature rises, somewhere like Bangladesh, for instance, becomes almost unlivable. And already the saline waters are getting into the water supply there. And is India going to say, welcome to the millions of Bangladeshis, come in, cross here? We've seen the pandemonium in Europe with a few thousands wanting to migrate. We're talking about huge numbers here, rising sea level. Too hot to work. The human body cannot stand a certain wet bulb temperature greater than 35 degrees. The body cannot cool. And certainly at the higher levels of emissions, by the end of the century, there's many parts of the tropics that will be greater than that temperature for some months in the summer. That means the human body just can't So people will not be able to do anything, basically. It's all right to say, oh, can go into air conditioning, but that's not going to be a solution. The staple crops failing. At some point, if those crops fail, there's going to be a threshold with migration or societal unrest, repeated droughts or floods again. So I think what we're seeing is something here that probably won't kill the human species, but it may be enough to make us kill each other. So that's the nasty thing there. Well, can we adapt to all this? So I think, I've said already, the devastation caused by the climate events that we've seen shows that we haven't adapted to even today's climate, let alone the changing climate. It's a problem in developed and developing countries. It's not just the developing countries. We're not prepared. We keep building in floodplains. I mean, this is just not on. So we're not adapting. But in the developing countries, it really can be crippling. And depending on emissions, in some places, adaptation could be practically impossible. I've already said that in many cases. I did want to put this into the wider context of a growing world population, move to cities, changing diet, changing the wrong way, unfortunately, taking on the Western diet rather than moving the other way, and the increasing demand for food, water, and energy. And I also want to mention the biodiversity crisis, for which there are international discussions at the same time. Of course, a lot of this is in the Sustainable Development Goals. You see them there. You see them on my badge here. I hope you're very aware of those UN Sustainable Development Goals agreed in 2015, but the progress has not been great. Now, climate change is number 13 there on the bottom left. But is many of the things there are very strongly linked to climate change or influenced by it. For instance, if I take the third from the left and the top row, that's human health. Well, in certainly in academic circles and health in the UK now, and perhaps worldwide, climate change is viewed as the biggest danger for human health. So we see a big link there. You can't have human health in the absence of dealing with climate change. And if we see some of the others, the yellow one on the left is renewable energy. If you go across these, I think 80% of them are very involved in the climate change issue. But equally, in handling climate change, we should not do anything that makes those problems more difficult. And for instance, the biodiversity crisis, we should be handling biodiversity crisis and climate change at the same time. I wanted to mention a little bit about the international negotiations. I've mentioned the UNFCCC to start with. This is where the countries of the world get together, and they've been doing it since 1995. And the 21st one of those was in Paris. And that's where the agreement was that the temperature rise should be limited to less than 2 degrees and an ambition of not more than 1.5. The big change in Paris and the success was to move to not telling countries what they should do, but actually asking them to volunteer what they will do. And so these nationally determined contributions were given in Paris for the first time. And the very important thing, they're going to be reassessed every 5 years. That was delayed, but that's where Glasgow came in there. And the rules for doing all this were a bit confusing, but that was Paris. And then Glasgow, it didn't achieve as much as we might have hoped, but it did do better than some of us feared. And I think the tests are will all the words spoken really be backed up by global greenhouse gas emissions actually peaking and starting to go down? We've still seen them going up and going up, and they need to peak by the middle of the decade and start falling rapidly by 2030. Are we going to see that? And the other thing is the financial. The rich countries have promised the developing world, the poorer countries, that we'll put a fund of 100 billion a year to help them cope with climate change. That was done many years ago. It's still not there. And the question as it comes to the next one in Egypt, are the rich countries really going to stump up with this money? Now, the COP27 is going to start on Sunday. And the background to that is not very hopeful, I'm afraid, because of the international situation and the lack of much revision of the NDCs. There are some hopeful signs. Let me give, I'll give one in a moment. I wanted to give just a little bit about the IPCC as well. This is the scientists getting together, scientists and those academics, policymakers, et cetera, wanting to actually assess the situation and input to the governments. So they input to the UNFCCC negotiations. So the latest reports were in 2021. The Working Group 1 is the scientists. They reported first, came up with words like, unless there are immediate, rapid, and large-scale reductions in emissions, limiting warming to 1.5 will be beyond reach. And I think really everyone's beginning to realize it is beyond reach now. Working Group 2 in February, they're the ones who look at impacts. And they said the scientific evidence is unequivocal. It's a threat to human well-being and the health of the planet. Any further delay in concerted global action will miss a brief and rapidly closing window to secure a livable future. Working Group 3, that's the policy one. The evidence is clear. The time for action is now. We can halve emissions by 2030. It's now or never. So I'm afraid that sounds a bit stark, all that. But I like to be positive. We can do it. We know how to do it. The question is, do we have the will to do it? Now, one recent report came out a few weeks ago. The International Energy Agency looked forward in the power sector CO2 emissions, and it starts in 1990, and you see it going up. But you see the total, they think it's probably just about peaked, and the emissions from the power sector around the world are liable to come down. If you look into that, you see the advanced economies, it's liable to come down quite well. And the question is about the emerging and developing economies. And they will need the help to develop in the new way of doing it. So they need to leapfrog the way we've done it for the new technologies, and they need our help to do that. Then this is almost the last picture I'm going to show. It may look a little confusing. This again was actually from last week, I think. This is the United Nations Environment Programme. And before each COP, they produce an emissions gap report. They say, this is where we are. This is where we want to be. So they're looking at various greenhouse gas emissions scenario. Does this pointer work? No, probably not. So I'll have to guide you through this. So the scale is in gigatons of CO2 equivalent per year. You've got 60, the mark at the top, and 20 is the mark at the bottom. And you can see where we are today, roughly. And in 2010, we were going up in that gray line with those policies. With the current policies, we're in the area of the blue, where current policies scenario, which is just about level with a bit up. If you take the NDCs that the countries have committed to in Glasgow and with a few modifications, then we're in roughly that orange, red zone, perhaps going down a little, but really not much. Whereas if we want the emissions to be consistent with the 2-degree range, you see the blue there, and through to the 1.5-degree range, the at the bottom there, that's where we need to be. And up the top is where we are. So this is called the gap report because they say those bars there show the gap between what we've countries of the world are promising at the moment and where they should be if you want 2 degrees, or where they should be if you want 1.5. And the 2 degrees needs about a 1/3 reduction. And probably a quarter reduction, actually. And the 1.5 degrees needs at least a quarter or more. So a third or more. The gap is just huge. My last slide will then come back to mentioning Gideon has talked about as well, where we think about the total picture. And this is a schematic that has been around for some time, but this is the Overshoot Commission, where they're thinking about, well, the rate we're going to overshoot what is a comfortable temperature for the world and for the world's population. And the green thing curve there, this is some sort of measure of time, shows you what greenhouse gas emission reductions might be possible in some time. And by the end of the period, they're almost, reductions might be down to a certain level there, such the change on the axis here, we have potential warming and its impacts. So the greenhouse gas emission reductions nearly to zero. So the warming and impacts are almost stabilizing there, except sea level, of course. So to make them stabilize, we need a bit of atmospheric CO2 removal, and the sort of things Gideon's talked about there are important, that and how we deal with the land surface and with the vegetation. Well, at the moment, we're on the left-hand side of this picture with some adaptation and some experienced impacts. But as we go to the right, then the greenhouse gas emission reductions, maybe the world will manage to stabilize the temperature somewhere near 2.8 degrees or something. And that almost definitely will not be a comfortable temperature for us. The sea level will go on rising. So it's possible that we will decide that we need to remove a lot more CO2 from the land surface and from technology, actually removing CO2 from the atmosphere. Beyond that, we need adaptation. And depending on how we do this, the impacts may even reduce. But that's an idea of how that may go in the future. We're headed for an overshoot of what we want. We need to act now, because if we can't manage 1.8, 1.9 is much better than 2. 2 is much better than 2.1, and so on. Whatever we can do, we need to get there. Then we may decide we have to go down to a lower level of CO2 in the atmosphere. Thank you.